The very first verse in the Dhammapada, the beautiful teachings from the Buddha, is Manopubangama Dhamma. Manoseta Manomaya, it's all about the mind. So the mind is the forerunner of all evil states. Well, reflect on that, the mind. Where do these nasties come from that come through the mind? They bubble up from somewhere. The Buddha says that the mind is the chief. If the mind is not trained, then these kind of states will arise from an untrained mind. And so if we're not training the mind and we have all these things going through the mind, it's because the mind is chief. So these are mind-made states. They are formulated nowhere else but within us. If one speaks or acts with a wicked mind, because of that, suffering follows. This is probably not as easy to just accept, because we all have seen situations where people do nasty things, say nasty things, but they get away with it. But actually, they don't get away with it. If the mind continues to be deluded and ignorant, then these kinds of states continue to arise, and we don't necessarily see their results right away. But this is recorded, it's registered, and we can contemplate that from our own experience. I know I've remembered things that I did decades ago. I think, why? Why did I do that? So I might not even remember, but it's registered somewhere within us. And the more we purify the mind, it's like if you clean a cup, it has tea stains, and you've drunk 1,000 cups of tea in that cup. And then suddenly you think, I gotta clean it. So you start rubbing, and you get the first layer out, then the second layer, and the third. And there's still a few stains left, so stubborn. They're just grown into the cup. But if you use bleach, maybe you can get it out. So this Dhamma practice is a bit like bleach. And when we meditate, we start with the first layer, the second layer. You keep practicing, 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 and eventually you get down to the very, very grain of your being where you see stains. How do we purify them? Just keep practicing. So the deeper blemishes in the mind need to be teased out over a long period of time. And when we notice the condition of the mind from long ago impacts that have sat within us, but eventually will appear and will manifest. That's the beauty of this practice. It's like looking in a mirror reflects what's looking until you see at an incredible depth. You don't really want to see that, but we can't help but see it, and then we think, I have work to do. I still have work to do. Even after all these lifetimes. That's the suffering of knowing, of seeing. We thought we were so perfect and blame everybody else. And then we can look and see and clean and keep purifying. Like the wheel that follows the foot of the ox that draws it. And so our unwise, unskillful actions follow from our poor mind states. It's a law. It's whatever we conceive within this heart, whatever comes forth, that's what will follow us. It's a karmic law. That's what karma actually refers to. We are responsible for whatever we produce. So by body, speech, or thought, because thought is the root, just like the trees. If a big derecho comes along, even a huge tree will just snap because it's such a tremendous wind. But the power of our actions and speech, the power of the evil or the unwholesomeness, is so strong that it will cut us down at the root, just like a great wind. So that's the first verse. Because of that, because of those mind states, unwholesomeness follows us. Just as the wheel follows the hoof of the ox that pulls it. It's just how it is. And once we come to recognize that from our own experience, we can't correct what other people do. But we can change the way we respond to life. And so if we want our suffering to end, we have to end it here. If we end it here, then the suffering that arises in the world will impact us differently. The second verse is Mano pubangama dhamma mano seto mano maya manasa cha pasamena pasatiwa karotiwa. So instead of evil states following, if we do good deeds, then goodness, good speech, good action, good thoughts, then goodness is bound to follow us just as our shadow. Because of that, happiness will follow us. Happiness, goodness. It's actually, the word in Pali is sukha manveti, happiness. It's wholesome. It's the good result, the wholesomeness. Because of that, happiness follows one just as the shadow follows us, and it never leaves. If we have a shadow, like if you're walking and the sun shines behind you, it'll throw a shadow. And no matter which way you turn, that shadow will just follow you. So the happiness follows. It's as close to us as our own shadow. It will always be there for us. And what we're looking for is a beautiful result. And so if we keep looking to the world for that, we won't find it in the world, because the happiness begins with right ways of thinking, right ways of speaking, and right ways of acting. So rightness means good results. And even if we don't see them right away, the biggest result is that we feel good. We have no regret about what we've chosen to do, how we've chosen to respond to life. Even if life seems heavy and dark, but you keep on practicing kindness, compassion, in the face of difficult conditions. I know that you travel long distances in your life to do the work that you do for truth and reconciliation. And you are one of those unsung heroes. How many airplanes you have to take to get to some of those subarctic, far north villages that you visit to help people in distress. And you're part of a team that does that. When you go to sleep at night, you would have that internal joy, even if you've seen terrible things, but the goodness of rushing out there for years, and you just keep doing it. And those people may not benefit a lot because they face very difficult conditions, but you bring them so much love and care at a great sacrifice. It's very inspiring. So we have unsung heroes in our midst, and we ourselves are capable of doing these kinds of things. Just to lift ourselves up by the bootstrings and making ourselves keep going because we trust goodness and because it gives us such a great reward. We feel at peace deep in our hearts, even if we see terrible things in front of us. But we still try to bring something good to that. A kind word, our time, our effort, our trust, our love. So to be able to develop that kind of attitude is important to recognize when we don't have it. And so you know when it's not there, and you know that it's possible, so you try to raise it up in your heart. Then you know that you're on the path, and the path rises up in front of you, and then you review that and you keep doing it. This is basically the Four Noble Truths in action. So we understand the suffering that results from unskillfulness. We recognize that suffering. We dismiss, remove the causes of it, and we're on the path. So kindness and compassion, reconciliation, and being a friend to truth time and again, these are our best friends. And even if there are times when we can't seem to rouse that up, but we just have this commitment, a total commitment, and we keep trying. So then it's like you're telling the ox, come on, keep going. And the cart rolls and the wheels keep turning. And so you get back up on the cart and you're on your way. And the thing is that deep within us, that registers. What's really important is when we're in trouble, people might not come to help us, but we will have a wellspring of strength from here within us to carry our mind to a good place when we're dying. Even if we're facing some harm, bombs are being thrown on them. Are they dying in fear and dread? But if they've lived a good life, if they've been innocent and kind and not harmed, then they will end up with good karma. Next life, wherever consciousness lands, there's a purity there that never dies. And this is one of the main teachings in this tradition, is that the goodness, the kindness that we practice in our lives is the jewel that we polish and take with us, because the body is bound for death, but that goodness carries on. That morality, that virtue, if it doesn't reach fruition, complete awakening, if we don't become fully awakened in this lifetime, the jewel of our life, the riches of our life, it's not like the riches of the world that you have to leave behind, they go to someone else. But this moral excellence follows us, just like our shadow. It's as if the sun is within you, and it keeps shining. So what comes to mind for me about forgiveness, you know, I've been contemplating this so much because I think about what's going on in the Middle East and I wonder what power will beings there have to forgive all that they're experiencing? Is there that much forgiveness? There has to be, but not easy. So first we have to find the place within us to forgive everything that is seemingly unforgivable. We have to come to that. It's not of this world. It's an ancient law. And it comes from our many past deeds, lifetimes of the circling of the wheel of life, lifetime after lifetime. We've been killed, we've been killers, we've harmed each other, we've loved each other. Yeah, we've done everything. We've had our heads chopped off. So much has gone on, so much bloodshed and so many tears. So do we want to add to that? Or do we want to end it? And this life is an opportunity to forgive so completely that we're not just regurgitating the same pattern again and again. It's the inner world that we can really change. We cannot change anyone else's karmic predicament. We have to change our own. So there's been a moral breach in some way. And it seems to come from outside. But the actual origin of it, we don't have the power of remembering our past lives and knowing, oh well, this person shot me to death. And I'm still angry. But I also stole their fortune the lifetime before that. And so it just keeps going back, back, back. You can't rectify all that. But if we want to end it, unconditional means we don't have to look back at every lifetime. We just know that this is a result. If we want to attain true happiness, you just take all the bolts off, open the cage, and let that bird fly, totally free. That kind of freedom requires a complete forgiveness. And then we won't be in a prison. If we have any moral debt, and we're not understanding the origin of it. But as long as we realize that we want to open the cage so the little bird can spread its wings fully. And we're that little bird trying to get free. So forgiveness first, and out of that sense of forgiveness, compassion will be possible unconditionally. And we have to practice. Just realize that if we don't forgive, then we may have to return and face that same person again in another life and do the whole dance all over again. Do we really want to do that? We can end it here. If we don't end it within us, then it doesn't end. We can't end it in the other person. That's their business. And their unskillfulness bears compassion because they're going to suffer. I've watched people die many times. It's a beautiful thing to watch someone die in a good state. It's an amazing experience. In fact, I watched both my parents die beautifully, even though they were incredibly disabled and sick. But, oh, the energy of their passing was just sublime, because so much goodness there, so much forgiveness. To meet people who live through horror, atrocity, and don't lose their sense of love, loving kindness and forgiveness, even of people that kill their parents, kill their relatives, they just believed in love. So if we worship that quality of unconditional love, we will always be served by it. That's grace. There's a moral law. This whole universe runs on a law of morality. That's why these two verses are so profound. We cannot fix anybody else's moral baggage. But our own, we're carrying it, and we can little by little lighten it through our right action, right speech, right thought. That's how we clean our slate. And when our heart is pure, then we look at other beings and all we see is their moral glow. They shine. You feel so happy. You want to be with them. So stay away from foolish people. Stay far away from them because your mind will be poisoned. And when the mind is poisoned, you'll start being infected by their unskillful acts. And purify your own mind. You don't have to be loved by everyone, but love everyone and love yourself. This mind is the moral tapestry. And if some of the threads become broken and loosened, then we're capable of horrific things. But the moral fiber that is there is so precious. Our human nature is truth, an embodiment of truth. Each of us has the seed of that, if we can grow it. It's just a travesty when you see beings going in the opposite direction who are so immoral, denigrating their own nature. And they do it with righteous anger, which is impoverished. So this is the world. The world does this. So we try to go beyond this world. A peaceful mind is one that stops. It stops here, within, because it finds completion within itself. That moral fiber becomes purified. And then it can really act. The Buddha acted from a place of total purity, and his message transmits to those who are willing to listen. But the only way you can truly listen to that message is by being silent. That's the irony of it. The mind has to shut up and stop judging, stop thinking, stop worrying, stop wanting to know. Just be quiet and listen to the silence. And in the silence, we hear the truth.
Namo Buddhaya Sadhu Karam Dadama.